Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me again today. This is episode 6 of The Drop Set. I'm your host, Darren Starr. Happy New Year, everybody. It is January 2nd. I'm recording this a couple days late. I typically like to do these on Friday. And, you know, last Friday I got really busy and it was leading into the holiday weekend. And I'm like, I'm just going to record this thing over the weekend. And that's always a recipe for success when I try to plan extra stuff over a holiday weekend. So that obviously did not happen. So recording this on Monday, better late than never. So I was also, you know, although it may be difficult to believe, I actually try to plan these things out in advance and like write an outline for the episode so that I have something to follow. And I wasn't happy with how things were shaping up, so I wanted to take a little bit more time with it. So hopefully the extra time spent there, hopefully it pays off and this is somewhat coherent and listenable. So knock on wood. So what's new since episode 5? A couple things. I put a blog post up on the website that details how I construct a workout log. And this is important just because, you know, bodybuilding is about progressive overload and it's not just about continuing to lift heavier. You know, weight counts, but it's, you know, one of many variables that needs to be tracked. And so what I put together in that post, it's a sample of, you know, I think I used an example from one of my chest workouts, and it just shows what I'm tracking and how I give myself space to track progression from one workout to the next. And then also, you know, when I come up with a workout split and, you know, a set of workouts, you know, you don't want to just change it up all the time. I've certainly done that before, and it has typically led to some of my least productive lifting phases where, you know, you're not really following any kind of a plan. You just walk in and you intuitively lift and, you know, I mean, you'll have some good workouts that way, but if you kind of zoom out a little bit and look at it long term, it's not, for most people, a productive way to approach lifting. So going in with a plan, so you have a set of workouts and you're going to go through those for maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, something like that, and just ensuring that you progress from 1 week to the next. And so I talk a little bit about how to strategize and some variables to look at specifically from, you know, week 1 to week 2 to week 3. So worth a read if you go to the website, 5starphysique.com. It'll be up near the very top there. And the other thing is that's new is, you know, we're now in 2017. So we have put the dumpster fire that was 2016 behind us. That's what most people believe anyway. So hopefully a fresh start. You know, it's just another day on the calendar, but it does symbolize a fresh start for a lot of people. So I've never been a New Year's resolution advocate. I always think that if you're going to resolve to do something, the best time to do it is always now, not necessarily January 1st. There's nothing special about that date. But a lot of people do believe in that. And so, of course, you know, as the hardcore gym-going populace that we are, you're going to find a lot of new faces in the gym. And one thing that I would encourage you all to do is remember where you started and help these people out. And that does not necessarily mean you have to go up and introduce yourself and, you know, spot somebody and give them form tips or go over their workout program with them or anything like that. Oftentimes, for somebody that's just starting out, the biggest way that you can help somebody is just to make eye contact and smile at them. And, you know, just let them feel welcome. Like, I mean, it's, you know, we're all very comfortable in a gym for the most part, but somebody who's just coming in, it can be really intimidating. And just one friendly look from a stranger that they don't know, who, you know, is somebody that, you know, might otherwise intimidate them, but, you know, they get a friendly smile and suddenly, you know, that's the kind of thing that can make a lifetime difference for somebody. You know, that could be the difference from them going home and never coming back to the gym, or, you know, kind of encouraging them to continue and come back and learn more and read more and work harder. So don't underestimate the value of a tiny little gesture like that. Don't be an asshole. You know, don't be pushing people out of your way. Yeah, it's crowded. It's going to be crowded for a little bit. You know, typically, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, things will settle back down a little bit. Just be kind, be patient, and be welcoming to the new people. So, the Q&A, you know, there was a little Q&A, I think we actually covered it in the myth section last week about spot reduction. I had a little confusion on that, so I just wanted to clarify. Regarding spot reduction, my point there was, if you continue to train a specific spot that is a problem area, and by train, I mean, you know, attack it with weights, you know, just, you know, hit it harder. That is not going to help that specific area lean out in any kind of different appreciable way. That does not mean that you cannot improve the conditioning of that area. You can, simply by improving your overall conditioning. So, you know, we've all got a spot where, you know, body fat tends to hang around for longer. You know, it holds onto this spot last. The way to improve that is just to reduce overall body fat stores lower than you have previously. You know, if it's your glutes or your lower back, continuing to train glutes harder or lower back harder is not going to help. Now, if you have a development deficiency there, you know, I mean, absolutely train it harder. But that's a big difference from, you know, someplace where you just hold additional body fat compared to the rest of your body. So I just wanted to clarify that you can absolutely improve it, but training it harder is not the way to do that. So, so we've got two big topics, for this week. The first one is, you know, basically off-season strategy. And then the other one is going to be something near and dear to my heart, how to search for a coach. If you find yourself in a position where you're like, I need a coach, what do you look for? How do you initiate a conversation? How do you communicate with a prospective coach? What do you look for? What are some red flags? What do you hope not to find? That kind of stuff. So let's start with off-season. This also is near and dear to my heart because I am in a, you know, I've talked before, I don't really like the term off-season because it implies that you're not doing anything. But a growth phase, let's call it that. So we're, you know, off-season to me says maintenance. And, you know, for me, I'm never really looking to maintain. I'm always looking to improve in one way or another, either get bigger, get leaner, whatever. So let's call this a growth phase, how to approach a growth phase. And just for sake of argument, I will continue to use the term off-season just because I know it's what other people use and they will understand what I'm talking about when I say that. So a couple ways to approach this. You know, I mean, if we look at it from, you know, the choose your own adventure strategy here, you've got two main paths. Some people really are strong advocates of keeping things as tight as possible, as clean as possible, and making sure that whatever they gain, it's muscle and there's minimal fat. Other people are okay with things getting a little bit sloppier, putting on a little bit of extra fat. And the argument there being, hey, you know, we're bodybuilders. You know, we know how to manipulate body fat. We can put on a little bit because we know how to take it off later. And that there are pros and cons to both. And the one thing that I want to say right out is, I do not believe that there is one correct answer here. It's going to be different for everybody. And a lot of it is going to be determined by, you know, what you're comfortable with, what your preference is, as far as, you know, how you like to see your body, and what you find motivating or unmotivating. You know, if you are the kind of guy who likes to be lean all the time, and when you start to lose some of that definition and, you know, you put on a little bit of extra fat, you know, the abs start to get a little bit fuzzy. If that's the kind of thing that just annoys you and pisses you off and demotivates you and makes you just want to say, fuck it, whatever, I'm done. That's probably not the approach for you. I mean, you could try and get over it, and I would certainly encourage that because you can't be razor sharp lean all the time. But, you know, maybe, you know, of the two paths that I described, maybe something a little bit more middle of the road, maybe trending towards the cleaner side of things might be a better approach. So let's talk about that. So keeping things clean and tight, you know, what are some pros and cons here? Well, you know, if you stay leaner, obviously, when it comes time to cut, it's going to make the cut easier. For a lot of people, it can be more comfortable, meaning, you know, you're not going to have to go through, you know, you're not going to have to pull out your off-season clothes necessarily. You know, the same pair of jeans might fit throughout most of it. You know, if you can keep things relatively tight, you're not going to have to maintain multiple wardrobes. Whereas, you know, if otherwise you certainly could. Now, it can be harder to see big changes. That kind of swings both ways. It can be easier also. So if you keep things tight, you stay relatively lean, a small change, you know, is something that if you have a keen eye for it, will show up easier. But as far as the big changes, you know, you've got to really be attuned to those little things and be able to see them. And to an untrained eye, you know, if you don't look at your, if you don't take progress pics, if you don't look at them, if you don't have anybody else look at them, you know, a difference of a half a pound up on the scale might not look like much. So you've really got to do more than just take pics and look at it, but really study yourself, you know, work on your posing, Take some measurements, you know, look in the mirror, use that, use your eyes as a tool, but understand also that your eyes can really play tricks on you. And typically what I find is that change happens that we don't see. We don't imagine change that hasn't happened yet. And there's always delusional people out there that say like, I'm getting huge. And they're like exactly the same. But usually, you know, there's a pretty good, you can usually tell a pretty, you know, if you compare progress pics and you're like, yeah, okay, I can see the difference here, but you know, the other person and the person that's actually the subject in those photos, if they aren't looking at those pictures, they might not notice that anything's different. And then they look at the pics and like, oh, holy shit, things are really different here. So it's important to take those pics, but really also just, you know, look out for the details, be attuned to the small changes that are taking place in your body. When you're leaner, you'll be able to see those a little bit more readily. So the other thing is, you know, typically compared to, you know, I won't even call it a dirty bulk, but, you know, something that's a little bit sloppier where macros a little bit higher, they're going to be tighter here. I mean, your macros are not going to be, you know, through the roof crazy. They can still be relatively high, depends on genetic factors, et cetera. You know, some people, you know, if you cut on 100 grams of carbs, and if you bump that up to 150, it's like, boom, the pounds come on. Other people, they can cut on 300, and you bump that up to 600, and, you know, their weight just kind of stays steady. So everybody's a little bit different. But if we're comparing the two strategies here, when you keep things cleaner and tighter, your macros are going to be smaller and tighter. So I put in my notes here that it's not as fun. So, I mean, you're not going to be eating as much. Typically, you know, we like to eat. If you find yourself as somebody that doesn't really like to eat a whole lot, or first of all, I think you're weird, or, you know, just, you know, food doesn't really appeal to you all that much. You eat for function exclusively, you know, whatever. I'll just keep things nice and plain and tight. Doesn't matter. Okay, this might be a good approach for you. There can be a lot of value in letting your body experience a period of significantly higher intake, though, not with the purpose of getting fat, but for the purpose of not being at poverty macros for 52 weeks out of the year. You know, you got to give yourself a little bit of a metabolic break and build up what I like to call metabolic capital. So the macros will be tighter. It's not to say that they're going to be super low, but comparatively things will be a little bit more restrictive. So again, personal preference, you know, do you want to stay tight? Do you want to see that definition, or do you want to see the big changes? You know, do you want to kind of see things blow up a little bit more? Do you want to see that scale go up? You know, that's not necessarily productive just to watch it go up if it's not going up in the right way. You know, the scale doesn't tell you muscle versus fat. I know some of them do. Do not trust those percentages. They can be wildly inaccurate. So look at the number, look at your pics, look at how clothes fit. You know, take some informal pinches. You know, you don't have to have calipers to grab your abdominal fat pinch site and just kind of pinch it, see how things feel. You know, pinch the, for guys, we tend to stay lean in the upper body. So maybe pinch a bicep, try and get the skin fold there, see how it feels. It should always stay, you know, relatively small. And if you feel it like starting to really kind of get a little bit thicker there, or you can take a measurement, you know, you can pick up some, you know, calipers for $5 or $10 and just take some quick measurements and log those. Just kind of monitor, you know, track the change there. Pay attention to how your clothes fit. So, you know, if the scale goes up and the waist in your jeans continues to stay relatively loose, I'd say generally speaking, that's a pretty good sign that the weight gain is largely productive. If you're spilling out and you're like, I can't wear these jeans, it's going to be sweatpants all the time, maybe less productive. You know, if you find that, you know, you're putting on your jeans and they, man, these barely fit over my quads, these barely fit over my ass. Okay, they're still fine around the waist. That's awesome. That's like the trifecta right there. That's what you're looking for. So it should always be productive, but don't necessarily rely on a scale that gives you body fat percentage, lean muscle percentage. Don't trust those numbers. In this case, the less scientific approach of, you know, seeing how your clothes fit, taking some little pinches, it can be a lot more accurate than trusting those numbers. So if you take a sloppier approach, you know, generally you will be a little less comfortable. Eating a lot can be a big burden. I'm feeling that right now. You know, my macros are not through the roof. You know, I'm at about 5,000 calories a day, which, you know, for a lot of guys is like, you know, some guys can cut on that, you know, I mean, so it's not ridiculous. You know, my carbs are about 500, but man, it's a lot. I mean, it's like every day is jaw day because I'm chewing all day long. So it's less comfortable in that way. And, you know, even like yesterday, I took a low carb day just because I felt like my system needed a little bit of a chance to reset. So it was a rest day. I brought my carbs down to about 150. I brought my fats down to about half of where they normally are also. So just, you know, a chance to kind of let the body reset and kind of get over itself to some extent. But it's going to be less comfortable because you're eating all the time. You're always going to feel full and stuffed. And then, you know, if you do let things get carried away a little bit, you will find that, you know, the fit of some clothes starts to become an issue. And, you know, nothing sucks more than not fitting in your clothes. So also, you know, if you take a sloppier approach, you know, you could find you put on a lot more fat depending on your genetics. You know, I talked about that. If you cut on 100 grams and you bump it up to 150 and suddenly you blow up, this approach is not for you. Keeping things cleaner and tighter will be for you. Now, also, when you have macros higher and you're less concerned with staying really lean, you are going to see bigger swings. So you are going to get that big boost of fullness from having full glycogen stores. You are going to see the scale go up a little bit, which for some guys, you know, especially guys, you know, some women as well, they like to see that. And that's the kind of thing that motivates them and gets them pushing harder. And if things get a little softer, that's okay. You know, in a growth phase, the most important thing is driving that workout intensity and then giving your body a chance to recover as well. So anything that serves to drive up that intensity, anything that motivates you to push a little bit harder, is where you need to be. And if that's staying leaner, cool. If that's letting yourself get a little bit, you know, a little bit blurry around the midsection, that's okay too. Again, it's a very individual thing. There is not necessarily a right or wrong answer here. So, now, if you're also going to take this approach where you're going to let things go a little bit, so to speak, macros will be higher. It will be more relaxed. It's a great chance to get yourself out of that prep mentality all the time. So precision counts, but you know, when you're in prep and you know, your carbs are at 130 grams, you know, they better be pretty damn close to 130 grams every day. And then, you know, as they get up and you know, if your carbs are closer to, you know, 550 grams or something like that, well, are they 500? Are they 600? You know, they're in that range, whatever. It's close enough. I mean, you know, you can kind of let yourself be a little bit more human. You still got to track your stuff, but the precision, you know, with numbers that big, it becomes a little less critical that you be super on point all the time. So you can get away with a little bit more. You know, it's a chance to be a little bit more human. You know, you're still focusing on, you know, absolute hardcore training. You're still, you know, following a structured plan. It's just the precision doesn't count quite as much. You got to get those numbers up there. So it's a chance to just kind of let the stress of following a high precision, low macro diet dissipate a little bit. And I think that's important to give your brain a little bit of a rest and, you know, maybe give your family a little bit of a rest too. You can stop being that macro Nazi who refuses to eat out with everybody and you can be like, well, you know, I'm letting things go a little bit. So, yeah, let's go out to dinner. I'll do my best to track some stuff. And, you know, if you plan ahead, you can kind of pull back on some carbs and fats earlier in the day to make room for that a little bit. If you go a little bit over, not the end of the world. I'm not trying to stay super tight. And then don't be afraid to adjust your macros. You know, if you're going through this process and you're tracking things, you're looking at your picks, you're tracking your weigh-ins, and you're like, phew, I want to tighten things up. You know, it's not like if you go down one fork in this road or the other, you can't take a bridge and go the other way for a little bit and try to clean things up. You absolutely can. So you could say, I'm going to just go hardcore. I'm going infinity macros. I'm just going to eat my way into growth. And your training is great. And then suddenly you look at yourself and you're like, whew, this is not where I want to be. Okay. I mean, you know, it's kind of good, but I need to clean a little bit of this up. Great. So you bump up your cardio a little bit, pull the macros down to some more reasonable levels. Great chance to, you know, help your body's insulin sensitivity reset a little bit as well. So it can be valuable. Don't feel like, you know, once you start going down a path, you've got to stay on that path. You can absolutely allow yourself to get sidetracked, and sometimes it can be very productive. The other thing about this is, you know, when you have a growth phase or an off-season phase, regardless of which path you choose, there's got to be an endpoint. So just, you know, you don't want to be that guy who is perma bulking. You've got to give yourself, I think, you know, one of the things that's valuable about bodybuilding is experiencing both phases and getting comfortable at how both phases feel, whether you're growing, whether you're cutting. But you know, your ability to ride through either phase is a skill, and, being able to, you know, improve your skill in both phases is critical. And if you're always bulking, you're going to forget what it's like when it goes to cut. So, there should be an end point on it somewhere. And also, you know, I mean, you're going to find that, you know, you're eating, you're growing, scales going up and up and up. And then, well, I've kind of plateaued and I'm already eating 7,000 calories a day. I don't know how I could fit any more in. You know, maybe it's time to cut, strip away a little bit of that body fat. You don't have to go down to contest lean, but give yourself a little bit of a break, and then you can jump back into it. So, and again, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, where the two paths are not permanently diverged. You know, you can kind of cross back and forth between the two. So, just something to keep in mind, putting an endpoint on things, and deciding how long, like, I'm going to start this and it's going to be a 3-month growth phase. So the end date is here. And that kind of helps put a little bit of sense of urgency on things too. Just like, you know, when you go into a pre-contest phase, we know what the end date is. It's the show date. So because that is constantly kind of, you know, ticking down in front of you, that countdown, it kind of makes everything a little bit more urgent leading up to it. So same thing with the growth phase. You know, it's not the end goal that we all think of. It's kind of like, you know, the priming the pump stage, so to speak. But nonetheless, you know, once it comes time to cut, your growth opportunity is pretty much done. And you just fall back into the mode of just hoping to retain as much muscle as you possibly can. So putting an endpoint on a growth phase kind of helps put in that same sense of urgency, like, this is my opportunity to build. I've got to make the most of this. I've got to throw as much intensity as I can into these workouts. I've got to make sure I don't fall short on these macros. I've got to hit this stuff. So it can help maintain focus, just putting a definite endpoint on things. And, you know, I'm an OCD structure fiend. So putting more stuff on my calendar is always a good thing as far as I'm concerned. I always like to know what's going on. I like to have my hands on the pulse at all times. So it's helpful for me, and I think it is for most people as well. They want to know what the purpose is. I would strongly advocate, don't set a target weight to hit. And I would say that goes both ways. You know, whether you're growing or whether you're cutting. Just because, you know, when you're growing, you know, if I said right now, you know, I'm at 230, I'm like, my goal is 250. Okay, well, that means I'm probably going to do some really stupid things to try to hit 250. And that's not necessarily productive. You know, you want, you know, your goal should be, I want to put on as much muscle as possible. And, you know, the number is kind of irrelevant. You want to track that because you want to see how effective the macros are, just like you're tracking other things too. But that is not the goal. Just like when you go to cut for a show, you know, especially if it's your first show, there is no numerical target for your weight. I mean, if you're trying to make a weight class, that's one thing. I would argue that you probably shouldn't try to. You always want to show up on stage at whatever weight has you looking your best. And that is not always the lowest weight. Oftentimes it is, but not always. So that's another thing to consider. So I think we covered everything there. I mean, the big thing is, you know, It may be, depending on your personality type, that influences this a lot. And, you know, what you find motivating and what you find defeating. So if you see those big swings, both in, you know, your photos and in the scale numbers, that may be really motivating. That may really, you know, get the juices flowing and make you push harder. It could also be, especially if you're coming off of, you know, stage conditioning, it may be hard to let that go. And again, I would challenge you that, you know, you probably should learn to let that go, just because you can't expect to maintain that all year round. Side note on that also, go on social media and try and follow some people who post photos of themselves year round and are honest of their conditioning. if you find people that are always posting their stage shots or their photo shoot pictures or, you know, selfies that they took when they were, you know, 6 months ago when they were getting ready for a show, they're not giving you a realistic perspective. I would challenge, you know, I mean, it's not their job to give you a realistic perspective, but they're painting an unrealistic picture of what is healthy and what is normal in bodybuilding. So find some people that, you know, post their off-season stuff, and we'll talk about what the process is like. And we'll show you the changes in their conditioning, and aren't afraid to post a picture where they aren't just razor sharp, cut to the bone. You know, it can be helpful just to, so you're getting a little bit of that perspective too. So, yeah, so that's it. Moving on. Okay, so our next topic today is, again, one that's near and dear to my heart, as are most of these topics, because if they weren't, I probably wouldn't be talking about them. So searching for a coach, full disclosure, if you aren't aware, I am a coach, so a lot of what you're about to hear is probably a little bit biased. So I always try to be the best coach that I can, and so a lot of what I'm going to be talking about here is describing the way that I interact with people and the kind of expectations that I want them to have when they come to me. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I don't pretend to be the perfect coach for everybody. Some people will thrive with a slightly different approach than what I bring, and that is fine. So that's why there are a lot of coaches out there. You've got a lot of options. But I want to talk about, you know, the things that I think are important and the things that, you know, especially if you haven't had a coach before, you know, things that you can use in your search, tactics that you can use, questions that you can ask to help make sure that you make a good decision. And if you have had a coach before, some of this stuff you may know. You know, maybe it was a great experience. Maybe it was a bad experience. I get a lot of emails from people who, you know, they talk about a coach that they've had before. And the most frequent thing that I hear, strangely enough, there are a few things, but the most frequent things that I hear are they became unresponsive, which I think is just absolutely flabbergasting. I'm just blown away by that. So part of it is because, you know, online coaching is exclusively 100% of what I do. So the thought that I could just disappear on a client is just absolutely ridiculous. I've worked with a lot of people also who have said that they received a plan from their coach and then, you know, they stayed in touch, but there were never any changes made over the course of several months, which again is crazy. I mean, if you're paying this person a monthly fee and nothing changes, it better be because you are experiencing the best results that you possibly could. And I've not been confronted with a case like that where somebody was just, you know, shedding body fat or putting on muscle like crazy, and that's the reason that no changes were made. So so lots of horror stories out there. But things to look for. So the first category that I would say is communication. This is something where a lot of coaches fall short. And, you know, sometimes it can be a problem and sometimes not. And you have to ask yourself, what is important to you? Is it important that your coach communicates to you, you know, in a timely manner, which it should be important. But also, you know, how much of a stickler are you for, you know, detailed responses? You know, because a lot of coaches, you know, a lot of them just take on more clients than they probably should. The responses are always terse. They may be accurate. They may be helpful, but you're going to get, you know, a lot of 1, 2, 3, 5 word responses. It's hard to know what you're getting into before you actually engage in a relationship with a coach, but nonetheless, there are some things to look for. So the first thing regarding communication is, you know, do they actually respond? When you send an email to them through their website or something like that, you know, do you get a response? I would also say that sending an email is probably the most reliable way to try and contact a coach. I've gotten direct messages through Instagram before, and I tell you, if I'm not looking for it, it's really easy to miss that. You know, Instagram is a very ineffective way to communicate, I think. I mean, it's great for sharing things and it's great for the social experience, but as far as a means of communication, it ain't great. So, you know, to all those who have received delayed responses from me because you've sent me direct messages through Instagram. That's why. It's just really easy to miss those things. Facebook is a little bit different. I think on my Facebook page, I do have, you can email me through there, but you can also send me a message through there. It's okay. It's fine. For me, I mean, I try to stay on top of everything as much as I can, but for me, my inbox is my to-do list. So I get, hundreds of emails a day, and typically I'm looking at an empty inbox because they all get addressed. So, and right now I'm looking at it and my inbox is empty. So, which reminds me, I'm going to minimize that so I'm not distracted by stuff coming in as I try and record here. So, so the first thing is, are they responsive? You send an email, do they actually respond? I would say you'll probably eliminate about a third of coaches that you reach out for just on that one criteria right there. They just don't respond, or it takes them a couple days. And, if you email them at somebody at 8 o'clock p.m. on a Friday, I mean, give them the weekend. I will oftentimes try to take a break over the weekend. Sometimes I'm traveling, sometimes I'm out and I don't put up an autoresponder. I always try to remember to do that. More often than not, though, even when I'm trying to take a break and not look at email, if I see something come in from somebody that needs a response, I'm going to respond. So, the other thing to watch for is, if you get an immediate response, it very well could be an auto response, and watch out for that, because usually, a coach is going to try and put their best foot forward in that auto response. So they may spend a lot of time crafting that. And then you kind of be like, oh, okay, this person really knows what they're doing. And then you actually start a dialogue with them and it's those really short responses. And it's like, okay, that was obviously a cut and paste autoresponder. So look at that, when you get something initially, don't always assume that it was written and addressed directly to you. It very well could be an automatic responder or just a quick cut and paste response. So follow up on it with a conversation and see how well they communicate beyond that. Because, when you're working with an online coach, communication is so important. It is more than likely the only way that you're going to interact with your coach. So if they don't email effectively and they can't communicate what they're trying to, if they can't communicate their thoughts and their intentions through email, it's not going to work. They may have the best planning in the world. They may be awesome. They may train all kinds of IFBB pros in person, but that does not mean that trying to do that online will translate at all. So, it's a lot more than just writing a plan and sending it off. There's actual coaching involved too, where you've got to, try and teach people, pull a little bit more out of somebody. And if you can't communicate effectively through email, it's really hard to do that. So look for those short responses, in follow-ups where it seems like, okay, there's a little bit of a bait and switch going on here where you got that cut and paste response. And now you kind of see how they actually respond when they have to type out their responses. One thing that I always make a point to ask people, is, initially they'll, often, the most emails that I get are through a form on my website. And it's kind of, put in your name, put in your email, put in your subject, type your message here. And oftentimes it's just a very basic, like, yeah, I'm getting ready for my first show, just looking for a coach. Okay, great. That's perfect. And then I will respond back and, I'm going to ask a lot of questions. I don't believe in cut and paste responses just because everybody is different, and a boilerplate response would just do a disservice to everybody, myself included, because my initial thoughts are going to be surrounding, trying to get as much information as possible to see if this is going to be a good fit and to do kind of a feasibility assessment right off the bat. So if somebody says, I'm looking to do a show in 13 weeks. Okay, great. Send me some photos immediately because I need to see what your conditioning looks like to see if 13 weeks is enough time. And I'm also going to ask for a summary on your diet and training, because if you're already doing 2 hours of cardio a day and you have been for months, like, this probably isn't going to work. So let's reassess. And I'm not afraid to tell people stuff that they might not want to hear, just because I don't want to be stuck in a situation where I wished I would have later on. So I'm always going to tell people, like, this is not a good idea, or you could, but I might recommend this instead, or we need more time, or, you could do a show, but you're going to be underdeveloped. You're going to be undersized. It would be better to spend some time putting on some muscle. Let's talk about that. The other thing that I will always ask people is, what questions do you have for me? I've got a lot for you, but what questions do you have for me? Because my goal throughout the whole process is to make you feel comfortable that I know what I'm talking about and that I care about your success and your results. So I think just extending that and saying, you know, hit me up with some questions, you know, let me know what's on your mind, you know, whether it's logistics, you know, about my strategies, my philosophies. I put a whole bunch of stuff up on my website. People ask me questions all the time that are directly spelled out on my website. And I'm never going to tell anybody, just go look on the website. It's all there. You know, I'm always going to write it out just because it's really easy to miss that stuff. So I'm always happy to answer questions, and I encourage them. And I think any coach that you reach out for should be encouraging those kind of questions as well. One other thing to consider is that, you know, as your relationship with your coach progresses and develops, they typically don't become more talkative over time. So, in those initial, back and forth emails that you have, that's probably about, the chattiest they're ever going to be. And then, you know, I mean, it's only natural as you get more comfortable and more familiar with somebody that, you know, you kind of develop your own little interpersonal shorthand a little bit and, you know, responses get a little bit shorter. But if you're already at like, you know, one sentence responses, five word responses, you know, it's only going to get shorter and shorter from there. So just consider that. Again, communication is important. You're not just sending a plan. You're trying to communicate ideas. You're trying to coach somebody. You're trying to teach concepts, and you make sure that, you know, the execution of those concepts is on point as well. So, communication is big. Social media is big too. Not that they have a big presence, not that you're looking to hire a celebrity trainer or anything like that, not like you're looking to hire somebody who is an IFBB pro or is on the cover of a magazine, because none of that stuff translates to being a coach. It means that, hey, you've achieved some success for yourself. That's great. That does not mean that you can coach other people. So what you're looking for is, do they have results from people who are not themselves? You know, have they coached other people, and have they coached them in the same way that they would be coaching you? Meaning, a lot of coaches who work online will also work with clients in the gym. So the results that a coach is able to get from a client in the gym simply cannot be held up against the same the results that they might get from somebody working online. I would challenge that, you know, those are separate entities, just like, you know, being a mathematician and a statistician are completely separate entities. You know, they both kind of rely on the same fundamental concepts, but they're different jobs and one cannot necessarily do the other. So that may be a poor analogy, but I think you get where I'm going there. So, you know, my entire business revolves around working with people online. So anything that I post on social media, any results pictures that I have up on my website, those are all from clients who have worked exclusively online that I've never met in person. So, and I think that's valuable, just because I wouldn't want to put up a bunch of pictures of people that, hey, I've trained these people in person, now hire me as your online coach and you'll experience the exact same results they do. So it's about, you know, when you're in there in the gym with somebody, pushing them through a training session, it's very easy to convey what you need to get out of them. When you're working exclusively online, it's a lot harder, and your coach has to be able to take that into account and make sure that your training intensity is on point, because training intensity is what drives everything. And especially if you're just starting out and just learning, trying to figure out how to develop that intensity is tricky. And that's a lot of the energy that I invest in working with a new client, is making sure that that's on point. So look for results, look for the kind of content that they post. You know, you can get a sense for, you know, do I want to be associated with this guy or gal? You know, do I think they're cool? Do I think they're a tool? Do I want to, you know, do I want to be a part of this person's business, basically? Also think about, you know, what are they pushing on their social media? You know, do you see them pushing a lot of supplements? You know, what is their aim? Are they just posting selfies all day long? Are they trying to teach? Are they trying to educate? Are they trying to show client results? You know, are they trying to sell clothes? I mean, what are they doing? You know, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I do one thing exclusively. You know, in 6 months, that may be different. You know, I may have workout programs for sale or something like that. So it's not just exclusively coaching. I may have some other things as well. So I don't want to disparage people who have, you know, multiple streams of revenue or anything like that. But understand what their purpose is and what their presence is on social media and how you may fit into that and may feel about being a part of that. Also look into their priorities and their philosophies. You know, you could, ask somebody, if you ask a coach, you know, what is your primary dietary philosophy? And, you know, if they can answer that simply and succinctly, just understand that's what you're going to be doing. Like, you know, for example, if you hire Dave Palumbo, you're going to be doing a keto diet. So just know that going into it. There's not necessarily anything wrong with that. But, you know, is that the best plan for you? It's a lot more difficult to, as a coach, to work with a client and determine what is best for you rather than saying, this is what I do, so now you're doing it too. So understanding what their philosophies are. If somebody asks me what my philosophy is always what works best for the individual. There are some things that I favor more than others. There are some philosophies that I don't really care for. Some of those I feel very strongly about. Some of them are just like, eh, I wouldn't prefer to do this, but you know, like intermittent fasting, for example, not a fan. And you know, there are some reasons behind that. And I've gone back and forth with a few clients on that, and I've shared my reasons and my thoughts. And, you know, some have said, well, I've experienced good results with this and I'd like to give it a shot. I'm like, all right, we can give it a shot, but I want to, you know, let's say we're going to give it a shot for, you know, this length of time. And then after that, I want to evaluate progress and see if, you know, see if we're both happy with what we're seeing here and have a conversation about it then. And then if one or both of us isn't happy, we're going to look at doing something else. So, but not having everything just so concrete and set in stone, you know, in some ways that's kind of nice because you can hire somebody and know exactly what you're getting into. But, at the same time, working with somebody that will work with you and help figure out, you know, what is best and most ideal for your body and will accommodate your individuality and your uniqueness is kind of nice as well. So, questions to ask, of a potential coach. One thing would be, what else do you do? That's a fair question. this could be, you know, explain your business model to me a little bit. I think realistically, that's a question that you probably wouldn't have to ask if you do a little bit of digging and a little bit of research, but, it's a fair question to ask because you want to know, okay, your coach, how many, you know, how thinly are they being stretched? Do they have time for you? And oftentimes it's impossible to tell until you jump in and then you can say like, wow, this guy or gal seems really overworked and I don't really feel like I'm getting the attention that I need or want. The other thing to consider there, and this is a question that I like a lot less, which is how many clients do you have? I really dislike that question just because when I answer that, I'm basically giving somebody my tax information. So, you know, they essentially, you know, if they do a little math, they know exactly what my annual revenue is. And you know, there are some things that I prefer to keep private. So, I'm not running for president, so I don't plan on disclosing my taxes. I think it's a fair question, but it's one that I prefer not to answer. And so what I always tell people, you know, my usual answer there is I've got a number that I will hit as a max because I know about how many people I can effectively take care of at once. And I put a hard cap on that and I'm not afraid to turn people down once I hit it. So, don't be afraid to ask for references. You know, clients that you are currently working with or have worked with before, you know, ask for references. And then, you know, don't be shocked if, you know, if they agree, if they ask for a little time. So one thing that I do is I maintain a private Facebook page for clients that I work with. So it's a private Facebook group. And so if and occasionally I'll get a potential client that asks for references. And what I'll do is post in that group and ask, hey, I've got somebody asking for references. Who would be comfortable with me passing along their email address to answer a few basic questions? And then usually, you know, within 10 minutes, I'll get a handful of responses and say, great, okay, send those email addresses off. There you go. But just, you know, if you ask for references, give whoever a little bit of time. If they don't give you any or if they don't want to give you any, that is a giant red flag. If a potential coach can't give you, you know, at least a handful of people that he or she has worked with before, that could, you know, talk about the process of working with them and, you know, the things that they enjoyed or maybe didn't enjoy about working with them. I mean, you know, that's something, you know, what are they hiding? You know, so, I will never turn anybody down who asks for references. I will just say, yeah, give me a a little bit, let me, you know, gather a list of volunteers that would, you know, be willing to ask some questions or answer some questions over email, and I'll get back to you. So, let's see. One other thing that's very fair to ask is, you know, what would my long-term plan be? This is a way that you can really get inside a coach's head and really kind of think about, you know, how they operate and what their big picture philosophy is. So you could say, you know, I want to be an IFBB pro within 5 years. So kind of map that out for me, not month by month or anything like that, but, you know, big picture, what should I be working on? You know, after 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, et cetera, where should I expect to be? You know, what do you think my prospects are? Lay it all out on the line for me. And don't expect a 10-page response or anything like that. But that's a good question to ask because, you know, you can, if you get a response like, hey, bro, we're going to build some muscle and lean you out. I mean, that's not an answer. And also, you know, be on the lookout for anybody, any coach who calls you bro in the first email. That's just a personal pet peeve of mine. So, but you know, how specific can they get? How vague are they? You know, if somebody asks me that, you know, I'm going to look at their picks, you know, I mean, cause you've got to have some frame of reference to base all this off of. So, we'll do a little evaluation. I'll look at picks, get an overview of their diet, their training as it sits right now. And then, you know, if they ask me a question like that, like I want to be, you know, an IFBB men's physique pro in the next 5 years, what would you recommend? And then I would say, okay, well, X, Y, and Z have got to come up, you know, whatever body parts seem lacking. One of the first things that we'll need to do is fix your posing just because it's hard to tell, you know, it's difficult to tell with any level of detail what your strengths and weaknesses are because you can't pose right now. So we need to figure that out. That's got to be like priority number one. And then I could say, well, I can already tell, you know, chest needs to come up. We need more thickness in the back. Your width is good. Your V taper is good. You know, calves need some extra size. Sure. So what I would say is, you know, let's spend, you know, this much time growing, target a show, you know, maybe like, you know, 8 months in, something like that. And then we'll reassess. And the goal should be, you know, if you're looking to be an IFBB pro in 5 years, we've got to do a few things. We've got to put on some size. We've got to improve your conditioning from one show to the next. We've got to get you some stage experience. We've got to get you polished. So over the course of 5 years, I'd plan on hitting, you know, maybe two shows a year, you know, with, you know, maybe a couple years in, depending on how things go, starting to look at national shows as well. You know, but not, you know, if you're hitting two shows in a year, I would do them fairly close together. Like one is a tune up for the other because you're looking for more stage time. You're not looking to spend more and more of the year cutting necessarily. And this goes back to our off season strategy discussion earlier. So that's the kind of thing that I would lay out for somebody like big picture, year one, year two, year three. This is what we're looking at. These are the big bullet points that we want to hit. So don't be afraid to ask what your long term plan might be. So, you know, you don't want to ask too much just because, I mean, it takes some effort as a coach to really put in some quality responses here. If you're giving quality responses, it takes some time, it takes some effort. And you know, you're just in the evaluation mode. You haven't signed any contract or anything. So, you know, you want to perform your due diligence as a potential client, but you know, don't ask for the farm, you know, don't ask them to spell out everything. What's my meal plan going to look like? What were my macros be like? You know, that just, you know, it's going to put you on the annoying list really fast. Just because, you know, those are things that, you know, coaches charge for. So, you know, don't try to get free shit out of a conversation with a coach, trust me. But, you know, see that they're actually willing to have a conversation with you. And I'll tell people, you know, because I've had people say, well, what would my macros be? I'm like, you know what? You sign up and I'll tell you. I mean, you know, here's what I would say. Your protein's going to be high. Your carbs are going to be moderate. Your fats are going to be lowish. But beyond that, you know, that's what I do. That's my business. So, you know, there's only so far I'm willing to take, and I'll just tell people that right out. But just make sure that they're willing to have a conversation, that they're willing to ask questions, that they're willing to communicate, you know, humor you, for lack of a better term. Don't invent questions that you don't care about the answer to. But, you know, as part of this process, you should be you should have an idea of what you're getting into and then ask questions relevant to that. And then also don't be afraid to ask, you know, what are the expectations? You know, going into this, you know, this is fairly reasonable. Like, you know, on average, you know, how much cardio do your clients do? Just because, you know, if you're signing up with a coach that's going to ask you to do 2 hours of cardio a day going into a show, you got to think about, okay, is this the right coach for me, or do I want to try and find somebody else that's going to let me get away with less? And, you know, I mean, there's always sacrifices to be made, but you as the individual, you have to determine what's reasonable and what's not. So, you know, I will always tell my clients, you know, be willing to do whatever I ask, but also be willing to tell me if I'm asking too much. So, and I think that's fair. You know, I don't want to sell anybody short, but at the same time, you know, there are a lot of people where this is not exclusively all they do. And, you know, as like a working mom, who has 2 kids and, you know, her husband's in the military and he's gone for 2 months, you know, 2 hours of cardio a day might be a tough sell. So, you know, there may be some compromises that you have to make. You've always got to make sacrifices, but oftentimes you have to make compromises as well. So, just something to consider. Ask what the expectations are, like from a time commitment, from a reporting perspective, from an accountability perspective, those kind of things. Like, how is progress measured? You know, what kind of things am I going to have to submit to you every week? That kind of stuff. Those are really easy questions and can help you get a better sense of what the process will be like moving forward. The final section is some less relevant questions, and these are kind of easy ones, but I get asked these a lot still. Are you insured? The answer is no. I do not have liability insurance. Liability insurance for personal trainers exists so you can get hired by a facility. I do not work at a facility, so liability insurance is not part of the job. Also, certifications. I have certifications. They You know, I've got a personal trainer certification and 2 nutrition certifications. I won't say that they are completely and totally irrelevant to what I do as a bodybuilding prep coach, but they're pretty close. So this is, you know, kind of almost venturing into bro science territory here, but certifications don't mean a whole lot when it comes to bodybuilding. So what does mean a whole lot is results that a coach has been able to get working with their clients in the same manner that they will work with you, and the feedback from their clients, current clients and previous. So those are the things that I would consider something like a certification far less relevant. So I hope that helps. You know, a lot of information to digest. And, you know, if you have questions about, you know, other things regarding a coaching search, ask me. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I expect you to be asking me to coach you. You know, I want to help make this a process that works for more people. I believe in the concept of online coaching. I believe that there are a lot of people doing it that probably shouldn't, but I believe that there are a lot of good ones out there as well. So I just want to put that out there. If you've had a bad experience with an online coach before, don't feel like all experiences have to be like that. So, you know, there are good ones out there, and I would encourage you to ask the right questions and help just find those people. So, all right, so that wraps up episode 6. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I really appreciate it. I will be back, hopefully, on Friday in 4 days' time with episode 7. We'll try and get back on the regular schedule there. In the meantime, once again, I am Darren Starr checking out here. So you can check me out on the web at 5starphysique.com. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/5starphysique, or on Instagram at 5starfit. Thanks again for listening. Everybody have a safe and happy new year, and I'll talk to you soon.